The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Carrie Lawson from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from Oprah Magazine. Starting off today in Culture and News, Oprah steps out in support of Kamala Harris at the DNC. In a powerful speech, Oprah spoke about the best of America. This article is by Cassie Hurwitz. The 2024 Democratic National Convention has been electric, with energizing speeches from former President and First Lady Barack and Michelle Obama, Hillary Clinton, President Joe Biden, and more firing up the convention's attendees and Democrats all across the United States. On the third night, Oprah took the stage to share her support for Kamala Harris as our next president. Oprah began by reflecting on America's current state of division. "There are people who want you to see our country as a nation of us against them," she said. "People who seek first to divide and then to conquer. But here's the thing. When we stand together, it is impossible to conquer us." Oprah called on a quote from the late Congressman John Lewis. "No matter what ship our ancestors arrived on, we are all in the same boat now." Reading that quote to the convention audience, Oprah shared how Lewis fought for the America we have today. "But the work is not over. The work will never be done because freedom isn't free," Oprah said. "America is an ongoing project." That's why Oprah, as she shared tonight, is voting for Kamala Harris. She's the best of America, the leader we need to fight for democracy and bridge the gap between Americans. Oprah also emphasized the need for abortion access, referencing the brave stories shared so far at the convention. "The women and men who are battling to keep us from going back to a time of desperation and shame and stone-cold fear, they are the new freedom fighters. They," Oprah said, "are also the best of America." Oprah wrapped up her speech by reminding the audience that this election isn't about the divide in America or Democrats versus Republicans. It's about you and me and what we want our futures to look like. As a registered independent, Oprah said she'll cast her ballot based on values and character, because that's what's important. "More than anything, you know this is true, that decency and respect are on the ballot in 2024, she said. "Common sense tells you that Kamala Harris and Tim Walz can give us decency and respect." At the very end, Oprah brought it back to the best of America: optimism over cynicism, inclusion over retribution, common sense over nonsense, truth, honor, joy, and freedom. We're all Americans, and together, let's all choose Kamala Harris. The next article is Oprah on the potential of AI, and this comes from the Welcome to Oprah Insider section. "I'm fascinated by how this technology is going to be a resource for change." This article is by Oprah Winfrey. Hello, everybody. I recently received this really incredible book. It's called Impromptu: Amplifying Our Humanity Through AI, and it's by Reid Hoffman with GBT4. Now, he gave this book to me that he co-wrote with ChatGPT-4, and at the back of the book, there's a whole section just on me. I think he did this for, like, 100 other friends of his. And you know, the book is about what AI is going to affect: education, creativity, journalism, social media, justice, all the areas it's going to impact in our lives. But this is what fascinated me. In the back, there are different stories about myself. one written in the voice of The New Yorker. In an age when the media landscape is awash in sound bites and fleeting fame, Oprah Winfrey stands as a monolith figure of culture and philanthropic significance. And there's another written in the style of a Rod Serling introduction to The Twilight Zone, traveling back in time to the 1940s and look, pictures of myself. And then there's another, and it's pages and pages of different manifestations. Give us 24 lines from an epic poem in the style of The Odyssey about Oprah Winfrey. In Mississippi's dawn, a child of humble birth, Oprah born, yet Oprah, she became for earth. I mean, so it really is showing you all the various things that ChatGPT can do. You just program what you want, and it spits out different versions of whatever it is you need. And I am just in this moment where I'm fascinated by how this technology, AI, is going to be a resource for change and improvements and making the world better. And yet, the other side of it, who's in control of it? And what happens when the bad guys get it? I am just curious as to where you all are in your AI journey. What do you know? What do you not know? What do you think's coming? What are you feeling? I mean, I have to say, we are the Jetsons. The Jetsons have arrived, and we are the Jetsons. Back over in culture and news, Oprah celebrates Al Roker's 70th birthday with tequila and surf and turf. She offered him some words of wisdom, too. This article is by Cassie Hurwitz. In early 2024, Oprah celebrated an incredible milestone, her 70th birthday. Just a few months later, she's helping another icon ring in that special decade. For his 70th birthday, Oprah sat down with Al Roker, TV host extraordinaire, to offer some words of wisdom. For a Today segment that aired today, Oprah joined Roker at his home in New York City, where he presented her with a summery cocktail and grilled up some surf and turf. "I was excited to make the number," Oprah told Roker about turning 70. "As a young girl, I never thought I would make it to the 60s or 70s. When Roker asked Oprah if she feels increased gratitude as she ages, she told him, "It's more about finding peace in the present. There is a sense of knowing that there isn't as much time left, and I'm at peace with that knowing," she said. "My great gift is being able to live in the present moment. It's the thing that brings me the greatest joy." Oprah also explained to Roker that her health has been a primary focus. "There's a sense of urgency about living well," she said, noting that her double knee surgery in 2021 reinvigorated her. Roker, too, underwent knee replacement surgery, so the two bonded over the way it changed them. After that, Roker asked Oprah an intense question. "Do you feel like you've done what you were put here to do?" Her answer? "It doesn't stop. It continues. Until the last breath, it continues," she said. "I think that ultimately there is no offering greater than your love. It doesn't matter if you are giving that love through your broadcast audience or you're just speaking to one. People may forget what you did or what you said. They never forget how you made them feel. So that feeling that you leave with every person that you encounter, that becomes your legacy." We think those are words to live by, and Roker was clearly moved by them, too. Oprah ended their lunch by telling Roker not to be scared of turning 70. And when he introduced this video to his Today co-hosts, Roker told them that he's trying to focus on the present instead of worrying what's ahead. He's journaling every night and truly reveling in this 70th birthday celebration. Parts of this article were edited due to time. We're over in the word of the week, weaponized incompetence. You know your partner knows how to do the dishes. This article is by Cassie Hurwitz. Weaponized incompetence. Are you constantly asking your partner to make your kids' lunches only for them to whine that you're just so much better at it? When making plans with friends, does your significant other foist the brainstorming onto you because you always have such fun ideas? That's not just annoying, it's weaponized incompetence. According to husband and wife duo Aaron and Stephen Mitchell, authors of Too Tired to Fight and co-founders of Couples Counseling for Parents, this avoidance technique happens. When someone uses their lack of understanding or familiarity with something as a rationale for denial of accountability and inaction, the problem is that lack of understanding is usually a load of BS. Using one's supposed incompetence to duck out of certain tasks is irritating in the moment, but it can also do long-term harm. It's destructive because it creates inequity in the relationship, which results in an imbalance of power, the Mitchells say. The imbalance leads to resentment and disconnection, with one person always feeling overburdened and taken advantage of. If you think that sounds like the invisible labor wives and mothers often get saddled with, you're not wrong. But it can happen in friendship, family, and work situations, too. According to the Mitchells, rebalancing the load is critical to the health of your relationships. You can start with some boundary setting, like telling your partner that you won't be responsible for packing school lunch every single day. Build a spirit of collaboration around the problem, the Mitchells say. That also applies to the work colleague who claims she can't ever figure out how to use the printer, and your sibling who has never helped find a present for mom. This next article comes from the wellness section. Four ways to embrace the happiness boost that comes with age. Take heart, midlife sloggers. We're wired to feel more joyful as we age, starting about now. This article is by Louisa Camps. Growing older gets a bum rap. In our youth-obsessed culture, landing on the AARP mailing list can feel like the beginning of the end. But science consistently shows that the opposite is true. After quantifying data on well-being from hundreds of thousands of people in 145 countries, Dartmouth College economist David Blanchflower, Ph.D., reported in 2021 that most people, regardless of educational, marital, or employment status, experience high levels of happiness when they're young adults, followed by declining happiness that bottoms out in their late 40s, then, beyond that, steadily increasing happiness. How to explain this U-shaped happiness curve, wherein seasoned 60-something turn out to be as joyful as 18-year-olds? Positive changes in personality due to growing more socially mature may contribute to the upswing. Studies of personality traits have shown that over time, we tend to become more emotionally stable, conscientious, and agreeable. Blanchflower, who is 71, theorizes, too, that adults tend to get happier after about age 50 because they've become more realistic, having accepted that they aren't going to be president or the next Aretha Franklin. They may also appreciate gentler pastimes, dancing, swimming, or, in Blanchflower's case, whiling away a summer afternoon fishing with his grandchildren, than they could at, say, age 45, when they still craved the rush of a rough tennis match or the challenge of a triathlon but mourned the fact that their knees were shot. As people grow older, they care less about excitement but then find other things they enjoy. Your life patterns change. Activities that didn't make me happy at 32 make me happy at 52, Blanchflower says. And to some extent, getting happier later in life may be hardwired. Researchers have found in observational studies that chimpanzees and orangutans also get cheerier after their midlife shallows. In humans, the neural chemistry that helps people sustain strong relationships, generosity, and religiosity, all well-established hallmarks of fulfilled lives, may strengthen with age. A study of adults aged 18 to 99 published last year in Frontiers in Behavioral Neuroscience found that the release of oxytocin, a neuromodulating brain hormone shown to reduce stress and anxiety, and influence positive social behaviors such as kindness and generosity, increased with age and was positively associated with greater life satisfaction among the study's older participants. All this is great news, and here's more. There are things you can do to amplify this natural shift. Read on for 4 ways, backed by hard data and wise souls, to swing upward in your second half. Number 1. Surf your second wave of success. When one door closes, another opens. But often we look so long and so regretfully upon the closed door that we do not see the one that has opened for us, is a quote often attributed to Alexander Graham Bell. And according to Arthur C. Brooks, Ph.D. professor of the practice of public and nonprofit leadership at the Harvard Kennedy School and professor of management practice at the Harvard Business School, one reason people suffer in midlife, staring darkly at their own closed doors, is that they fail to understand why, after successfully striving and innovating for years, they now struggle to come up with the kind of sparky new ideas that earned them rave reviews earlier in their careers. People freak out because society is obsessed with youth and the abilities of youth, and because they think they only get one act, says Brooks, author of From Strength to Strength. But psychologists have identified 2 types of intelligence that flourish at different stages of life. The first is fluid intelligence, which helps young adults innovate and solve novel problems and typically peaks in our late 30s. The second is crystallized intelligence, which enables older adults to use the knowledge they've acquired in the past to identify patterns and educate others about the intricacies of complex ideas and systems. And it's important to understand the difference because people who assume that it's curtains for their career once their fluid intelligence wanes may actually behave in ways that hurt their performance and health. Indeed, controlled clinical studies of so-called negative self-stereotyping have shown that when older adults are presented with negative age stereotypes and apply them to themselves, they perform more poorly on memory tests and even walk more slowly. According to Brooks, who was president of a think tank before he left to teach at Harvard in his mid-50s, one way to avoid sinking into midlife despair is to step gracefully onto the rising wave of your crystallizing intelligence and notice all the new doors of opportunity it opens. You don't need to change jobs or careers, he insists, but you can think of it as moving from your cowboy curve into your coach curve, where you're now incredibly good at helping other people do amazing things. If you're a startup entrepreneur when you're 30, you can be a venture capitalist when you're 60. If you're a star litigator at 35, you can be a managing partner at 65, he said. In every profession, there's a version of it, helping other people to become better at what they do, and it's really rewarding. Number 2, work like millennials and Gen Zers. Kids today just don't know the value of hard work, is something you've probably heard older adults mutter about younger adults. Maybe you've muttered it yourself, but that get off my lawn attitude, as Bruce Feller, author of The Search, calls it, fails to appreciate one of the great gifts millennials and Gen Zers have given their elders. When they embarked on their careers, many people now in their 40s, 50s, and 60s initially got on what I call the should train. I should be doing that. I'm expected to follow this path. I had to sell my soul to a company. I had to do what my parents wanted me to do, says Feiler, 58. But Gen Zers and millennials have led the charge to push employers to provide more fluid schedules and prioritize positive contributions to their industry or community. And they've normalized changing jobs frequently to find work that aligns better with their values. These cohorts, Feiler says, have actually saved work in a lot of ways. We're lucky to be learning from the younger people around us to embrace change more often. It's a very positive thing. Lesson number 1, follow your passion. The main reason Feiler and many of the boomers and Gen Xers he interviewed for The Search are happier in work than ever before is that the people who are most fulfilled don't climb, they dig, he says. They do a treasure hunt in their own life by asking themselves, what is the story you have been trying to tell? What is the problem you've been trying to solve? What is the source of happiness you had to push aside? Another path for professionals of a certain age is a so-called portfolio career, in which you work fractionally in several different lanes, says Susan Wilner Golden, author of Stage, Not Age. Diversified careers don't just help people who have ducked in and out of the workforce to care for children or ailing parents wield the different skills they've acquired. They minimize risk of one component disappears or gets taken over by AI. They also provide older adults greater freedom to choose projects that chime with their core values, says Golden. She co-taught a course on the innovation opportunities needed for longevity and healthy aging at the Stanford Graduate School of Business, and among other gigs that bring me joy, has collaborated with Pivotal Ventures, a Melinda French Gates company, on a project to streamline resources for caregivers for older adults, since, as she passionately notes, over 61% of the 53 million unpaid caregivers in the U.S. are women. Number 3. Poll a Rodney Dangerfield. And go back to school. One major source of bliss later in life is having more freedom, as many empty nesters and retirees finally do, to choose how you spend your time. But golfing every day isn't optimal. Older adults who spend some of that free time learning new things gain big benefits. They can help keep them sharp and independent for years to come. Rachel Wu, PhD and Associate Professor of Psychology at the University of California, Riverside, studies cognitive agility across the lifespan and reports that the happiest and healthiest older adults don't do just one favorite leisure activity day after day. Instead, they dedicate time to learning new things and stay open to mastering new skills, even though it may give them some temporary unfun frustration. After she had adults between the ages of 58 and 86 take 3 classes simultaneously in subjects such as Spanish, digital photography, and painting, they significantly improved their cognitive scores on memory and attention tests, performing as well as adults 30 years younger. And remarkably, they went on to improve even further, so much so that when Wu and her colleagues gave them follow-up tests a year later, their cognitive scores were on par with undergraduate students. A lot of people just think, well, I'm 70 and this is what happens to 70-year-olds and your brain starts to slow down, says Wu. But she has found in her research that once adults begin learning again through curriculums like the one she designed, many local university extensions, community colleges, and community rec departments offer comparable courses. Their cognitive skills in testing, measuring attention, and working memory, recalling numbers in sequence, for example, eventually may start looking more like younger adults, and they're likely to report feeling more engaged and capable of learning than they had in years. Flush with the pleasure of meeting new people through their classes and gaining exposure to novel ideas, they'll turn to me and say, oh my God, I was missing out on so much. This is so much fun. I never want to go back to where I was before, says Wu. There's a lot of benefit to having control over your life, but there are also benefits to losing a little bit of control because then you can enjoy exploring the world more. If you can take advantage of an intergenerational program in which adults spanning decades study side by side on a university campus, more power to you. Golden enrolled in a year-long program at Stanford University at 61 and was delighted to discover that she and her classmates, who ranged in age from their 20s to their 80s, were all at exactly the same stage of life, learning, rethinking what we wanted to do, resetting our life priorities. It was just one of the most rejuvenating experiences you can imagine. Number 4. Keep growing on a soul level. According to Professor Emeritus of Psychology and Neuroscience at McGill University, Daniel Levitin, Ph.D., gratitude works at any age to increase happiness. Practice gratitude for what you have. This is motivating, alters brain chemistry toward more positive emotions, and oils the pleasure circuits of the brain, he writes in Successful Aging. You can get a bump from appreciating something as simple as the taste of your morning tea or the sight of a cardinal out your window. Or you can allow gratitude to help you turn a painful setback into an engine of growth. Gladys McGarry, M.D., a pioneer of holistic medicine who has lived more than a century, is living proof. She suffered mightily as a child due to undiagnosed dyslexia and was blindsided at age 69 when her husband of 46 years left her for another woman. Nevertheless, as McGarry writes in her new book, The Well-Lived Life, finding the possibility of transformation within every challenge can go a long way toward helping help people her age and much younger experience transcendent happiness. McGarry found herself howling with rage for almost 10 minutes as she drove home from work on the highway one night after her divorce, having never felt so hurt or humiliated. But then she just stopped, struck dumb by the realization that some unknown thing was coming for me, a future she had never imagined for herself, and it was a gift. The epiphany was so powerful that McGarry ordered herself a customized Be Glad license plate soon after. If you're stuck, you can choose to stay stuck, or you can choose to start looking for lights and love or whatever it is you would like to have, says McGarry. There are always ways of calling out for help in your dreams, in your prayers, in your thinking. If you keep thinking about how you're going to get out and on the soul level what you were put on this earth to do, then things move. You don't stay stuck. Moving over into lifestyle, meet the Olympian-Paralympian duo who founded one of Oprah's favorite things. Tara Davis Woodhall and Hunter Woodhall are Team USA's power couple, and they make comfy sweatshirts to boot. This article is by Sophia Lodato. The Summer Olympics were full of some epic moments. Pommel horse Guy winning bronze, Sha'Carri Richardson's viral stare down, Turkish sharpshooter Yusuf Dikic clinching silver with nothing but a gun and glasses, and even the new inclusion of breakdancing. But it was a moment of sheer triumph when Tara Davis Woodhall won a gold medal in the long jump, and one of the very first things she did was sprint to the stands and into the arms of her husband, Hunter Woodhall. In the sweetest video you'll probably ever see, Hunter exclaims, "I'm so proud of you. Oh my God, you're the Olympic champion." Davis Woodhall isn't the only medal winner in the family. Woodhall is a distinguished athlete in his own right. He is a double amputee runner with 3 medals from the past 2 Paralympics, some of which he won while he was still a high school student, and naturally he plans to go for gold this year. The two met while at a track meet in high school and have been together since. And sports aren't the only thing going for this track and field power couple. Believe it or not, an item from their sweatshirt brand, Giant Hoodies, was selected as one of Oprah's favorite things back in 2020. Their products feel like more than just athletic wear. They're a blend of comfort and sophistication, focusing on high-quality materials and cozy design. Our journey started from a humble desire to bring comfort into every home through every season, they say on their site. With each hoodie, we stitch a bit of our history and a lot of our heart. It's a story of late nights, early mornings, and the magic of turning dreams into fabric. Comfy sweatshirts aside, it's hard not to fall in love with this duo. Woodhall recently shared support for his wife in a very heartwarming post on Instagram. "No words to describe how proud of you I am. No luck involved, you earned this. Discipline, work ethic, and grit. These are the moments, and this is your moment. Soak it in." Still in lifestyle, meet the women who are helping fight heart disease. Here is what drives the Circle of Red members. This article is by Lisa Mulcahy. That's Mulcahy. The statistics are sobering. Heart disease is the leading cause of death among women of all ages and is responsible for 1 in 3 deaths each year in the U.S., according to the Centers for Disease Control. Yet many women still don't understand how serious their risk is. Education is an important part of prevention, and the American Heart Association, AHA, works tirelessly to provide resources for women through its Go Red for Women movement, encouraging everyone to do what they can to recognize and prevent cardiovascular conditions. For more than 2 decades, Go Red for Women has addressed awareness of heart health and the clinical care gaps found in its diagnosis and treatment, and helped inspire women to take charge of their health. But to take on such a large task, they need help. This is where the volunteers of Circle of Red, women and men who share the same passion to make a lasting impact on women's health, come in. Go Red for Women's annual Giving Society raises funds, as well as dispels myths about and raises awareness of heart disease in communities throughout the United States. Members of Circle of Red address the needs of their communities and assist groundbreaking research by raising life-saving donations. Circle of Red members are transforming their communities with their involvement in changing public health policies and helping address inequities in access and quality of care, as well as in research. Good Housekeeping hosted a roundtable of five of these diligent, hardworking, inspiring women who make Circle of Red the huge success it is. To learn what makes them successful, here's what they told us. Meet the Circle of Red Chair's Roundtable. Carolyn Williams Francis, Columbus, Ohio Chair, President, and CEO of Williams Interior Designs. Darlene Ellison, Dallas Co-Chair, Senior Vice President at Veritex Bank. Katie Grimes, Kansas City Co-Chair, Senior Mortgage Consultant at Cross Country Mortgage. Stacy Murray, Dallas Co-Chair, Financial Executive. Rachel Smith, Kansas City Co-Chair, Attorney and Owner of Injury Law Associates. How has heart disease touched your life, inspiring you to join the Circle of Red? Ellison, I got approached by a friend of mine who had been the chair of my local Circle of Red. At the time, I said I don't really have any personal experience with heart disease, but I'm really passionate about bringing women together and talking about health. Fast forward 3 years, and I know at least three people, including myself, who have experience with heart issues. This really made me think even more about how important it is that we get the message out about preventing heart disease. Murray, I really believe that the mission, the education about the risk of heart disease that the American Heart Association provides, is very important. I attended a couple of events hosted by Circle of Red and was always very impressed by the commitment to the cause. Grimes, I think that for me, with Circle of Red, the feeling of not only giving back, but doing business with other like-minded businesswomen in Kansas City had a big appeal. Giving back has always been a huge pillar of my business. We are all middle-aged women, and heart disease is certainly going to be something that you know one or many of us will be faced with. Francis, my late twin sister who had a heart condition and I joined Circle of Red. Our luncheons, which are among the largest in Ohio, are a good opportunity for people to really learn about women and heart disease and different symptoms that we might not even recognize until they lead to very serious problems. Smith, my dad who lives in Ohio is a veteran, and he used to fly out to see us for Veterans Day. 1 year he was scheduled to come, but my stepmother said, Dad's got really, really bad heartburn. I was like, bad enough to not come visit? He did come, but he was unwell the entire weekend. We learned when he returned home he'd been having a heart attack the whole time. What impact is Circle of Red making in your local communities? Murray, as women, we just have this crazy innate ability to connect, build each other up, support each other. Our events are a great way we can come together and really just put our arms around each other and offer advice and suggestions. We can say, I'll go to the doctor with you, or let's go on a walk together. I find a lot of satisfaction being with women at events and building relationships. I just think it's really powerful. Ellison, we have a pickleball event coming up, and women who have supported us in the past are bringing their friends to it. It's about bringing women together to do something active, to share healthy snacks, and to spread important messages, like through a survivor who is there telling their story. I'm just creating fun moments for women to connect through. Most of the women who are involved in Circle of Red here in Dallas seem to be some of the busiest women on earth, so this is just a great way to have time to socialize. Francis, in Columbus, we have over 30 new members this year, and we have a total of 66 women in our Circle of Red. At our luncheon, you feel the love and the warmth. And I tell you, there's not a dry eye when any of our survivors speak. It's just a blessing that we have the opportunity to get together in that atmosphere. We're from different backgrounds, and that's what I like about us. We all come together for the thing we're concerned about, women's health and heart disease. What does being a Circle of Red member mean to you personally? Francis, I am a survivor. I prevented my heart attack. I'm 64 now, and when I was 48, I had ankle surgery, after which you have to watch out for blood clots. When I was doing physical therapy to recover from my surgery, I started to notice that I would get out of breath when I was walking or when I was riding a stationary bike. My neck was also hurting. I was just not feeling well. And one day when my symptoms happened at physical therapy, I thought, I'll just go home and lay down. But then I got this instinct that made the hair stand up on the back of my neck. I knew not to go home and went straight to the ER. Turned out I needed a stent immediately. I was taken by ambulance to another hospital that specializes in cardiology, and a friend of mine who is a cardiologist happened to be the one who performed my procedure. I've done very well since then and want to share my story to help other women. Ellison, I think a story like Carolyn's is so impactful and more women need to hear stories like hers. With the support of AHA, I think collaborations with different groups and organizations are such an important part of what we do, and women who are survivors need to be telling their stories in these sessions. It's not just putting them on a billboard or talking at a luncheon attended by lots of people. It's important that survivors speak to intimate groups, too. Our events may have, 20 people there, and have a survivor speak. And women can identify because that survivor is right there with them. We have to do this kind of messaging collectively, as women for women, with women, about women. Why should every woman prioritize her health, especially her heart health? Grimes, I have 4 kids. I work a lot of hours. So as with a lot of women, my health was at the absolute bottom of my priority list. A couple of years ago when I turned 40, I knew I wasn't taking care of myself. Right now, I don't have any heart-related issues, but this is where it starts. I could see a road where in my 50s or 60s, I could begin to develop serious health complications. I want to be around for my kids and grandkids. I don't want heart issues. Almost all heart disease can be prevented when you're younger. The key is being aware of what you can do to prevent it right now. Smith. I always think about when you're on an airplane and they say, put your own oxygen mask on first, and then you can take care of your kids. As mothers, business owners, and community leaders, taking an hour to go get a heart scan is doing just that. Murray, we're just living in a hustle and bustle society. It's very easy to forget about self-care, exercise, and prioritizing our health. I think part of our mission in getting women together is to share the importance of how women can focus on diet, exercise, and meditation to reduce their risks. What would you tell someone who's considering getting involved with Circle of Red? Murray, joining Circle of Red can have different meanings to different people. Some have had a personal experience with heart disease and want to support the cause and advocate. Other people may say, look at this fabulous group of women supporting this cause. I just want to be in the room with these smart, professional, successful people. Once someone joins for any reason, they're going to feel so welcome. These are real people who care. Smith, I think the key would be getting 2 or 3 or 5 women together and saying, who wants to be a part of this mission? Who's interested in networking and spending time with other successful women? Then engage with the American Heart Association and say, we'd like to launch this. The AHA does a great job of supporting us. Francis, we want everybody to walk with us, to learn about heart disease and learn more about other things that we do. You can work with Circle of Red or Go Red for Women, attend a luncheon or explore other opportunities to volunteer. We need our volunteers. They're our foundation. Every person knows somebody who has had a heart attack. That starts a relatable conversation that opens the door. Ellison, in Dallas, Circle of Red has gone from being first a donor opportunity to being so much more. This is because women see the need for connection, education, and relationship building. You can contact AHA in your area and find a variety of ways to become involved. go to the AHA site and see what's happening where you are. If somebody was looking to create a circle of red in their community, I would be like, how soon can we talk? Across the country, organizers are there to help answer your questions and to inspire you. What Circle of Red brings home for me is that heart disease is every woman's issue. We leave these events with an understanding that we need to be aware of the signs of heart disease and to be vigilant so we can spread this message to other women. Over in wellness, how to identify your purpose in life. Do these simple exercises outlined by the authors of Ikigai, The Japanese Secret to a Long and Happy Life, and unlock your reason for being. When Hector Garcia and Francesc Miralles met each other in Japan, they discovered a shared interest in the concept of Ikigai. According to the Japanese, everyone has an Ikigai, which the two men likened to raison d'être. As they spent time with some of the world's longest living people in Okinawa, Garcia and Miralles learned more about this principle. Their book focuses on many habits of the Okinawans: gentle movements, finding flow, cultivating joy. But they also included an Ikigai diagram first published by Mark Wynn, who himself was inspired by Dan Butner's work on living a longer, healthier life, which included a mention of Ikigai. Here's the diagram. So the diagram has four circles, and they intersect with each other. So there's one, the top one that's orange, it says what you love. And then in the middle, connecting all of them, is Ikigai. And then on the bottom is what you can be paid for. To the right is what the world needs, and to the left, what you are good at. Then there are ones that intersect with each other. What you love and what you are good at intersects with passion. What you love and what the world needs intersects with mission. What you are good at and what you can be paid for intersects with profession. And what you can be paid for and what the world needs intersects with vocation. While this and similar diagrams have spread like wildfire across the web, when we spoke to Garcia and Miralles, they were very careful to note that only 1 to 2% of people on the planet find an Ikigai, or purpose, that covers all four circles, like the musician Lang Lang, who knew from a very young age that he wanted to be a concert pianist and made a global career of it. For the rest of us, our goal is to find ways to cover all four facets in our life, not necessarily in our job. To begin, fill in the circle what you love, then list your strengths in what you are good at. Garcia and Miralles have heard from thousands of readers of their book, many of whom found this to be a challenging circle. The authors believe it's hard because many people think their talent needs to be a huge world-changing skill. That's not the case, they say. It's the innate skills you've cultivated. Now complete the next two circles, listing the skills you have that fall under what the world needs and what you can be paid for. If you're struggling to fill in circles, ask trusted friends to share their thoughts on where you really shine or which skills you could be paid for. Garcia and Miralles suggest you wait 3 days before moving forward. In their experience, the Ikigai exercise is a shake to your subconscious. Over that time, you may come up with more items to list or realize you need to move some around. Once you've listed all your skills in the appropriate areas, look at the diagram two circles at a time and craft a sentence for each of the following for the overlap categories. For instance, if you love researching and reading and you're good at communicating ideas, your passion might be writing about X, Y, and Z. If you're good at communicating ideas and the world will pay you to write press releases, your profession might be to become a PR director in X type of field. You might see several options depending on what you've put in the circles. Feel free to list each option within the overlaps. Passion, mission, vocation, and profession. Those are the sections that overlap in the circles. In the next step, consider combinations of the above that would give your life purpose. For example, if you're good at finance and you can get paid for it as a venture capitalist, but it's not what the world needs, You might combine something else you love, hiking with, say, taking a seat on a board of an environmental nonprofit. Finding a career that hits all four circles is hard, but in this example, you find a job that covers two of the circles and a hobby that covers the other two. Garcia and Morales also suggest people could incorporate things they love into a job that's only so-so, cultivate small joys, or put down their phones and mindfully develop a new talent. Which combinations could you envision? Then they have lines that you can fill in combination 1, combination 2, combination 3, combination 4. Looking at the prior combinations, which resonates the most? How might you expand this into a first draft of what you propose could be? Don't be afraid of making it as big and as ambitious as possible. Using the prior examples, Garcia and Morales might say something like, "My purpose is to change the way people think about how they will live their life. I will do that through writing books." Or, "My purpose is to support my family through a career in finance, and I will use my skills to also commit to preserving lands in my community." And then there's a series of lines again that you can write out your own ideas. This statement may need refining in the future, but for now, allow it to help you identify your passion, mission, vocation, and profession, and then take steps to combine those elements in a way that your life begins to align with your reason for being, your ikigai. We're over in the beauty, skin, and makeup section. The secret to healthy, dewy skin just may be bugs. Tending to your skin's bacteria is likely not in your usual routine, but science is finding that your microbiome holds serious beauty power. This article is by Isabel Burton. There's a secret language spoken within your body, constant chatter, plotting, planning, deal-making happening below the surface. The conversationalists, bacteria, fungi, viruses, and parasites that make up the microbiome in your gut, among other places. What are they discussing in their microbial language? How your organs and systems should operate. The biomass of these bugs is greater than your actual human cells by orders of magnitude. So they have a lot to say, and as science is discovering, one topic of conversation is your skin. How the bugs in your gut affect your skin. The communication between the microbiome and the skin is officially called the gut-skin axis. It ensures that when your gut bugs thrive, so thrives your skin, staying soothed and calm, shielded with a robust outer barrier, and stocked with a natural defense against UV rays, according to Kenneth Brown, MD, gastroenterologist and the Gut Check podcast host. Without a healthy gut microbiome, having healthy skin is very difficult, he says. In fact, dreaded issues that plague us like dryness, acne, eczema, psoriasis, rosacea, and premature aging are fallout from a microbiome that's weak and run down, proves research published in the journals Microorganisms, Gut Microbes, and Clinics in Dermatology. The microbiome regulates the immune system, studies say, and depending on the colonist's state of health, will dial inflammation up or down, in turn, causing or curbing myriad skin conditions, so many that one report calls the range exhaustive. Another key factor, postbiotics. Robust intestinal bacteria produce postbiotics, which act as messengers and nutrients telling other organisms how to be healthy. By taking care of your gut microbiome and encouraging growth of beneficial bacteria, you're supporting the production of these beneficial bacterial byproducts, says Suzanne Devkota, PhD, director of the Human Microbiome Research Institute at Cedars-Sinai. You may also have heard of probiotics, live microorganisms, and prebiotics, the foods probiotics need to grow and flourish, but postbiotics are the gold that Devkota is talking about. They're the drivers behind a healthy skin barrier, courtesy of postbiotics called short-chain fatty acids, and internal UV protection, thanks to a type called indoles, adds Brown. your skin has a microbiome too. This ecosystem sits on the surface of skin and acts like its control center, constantly communicating and negotiating with the outside environment and internal goings-on. According to Jeremy Brower, MD, a board-certified dermatologist in New York, its list of responsibilities is long. It blocks harmful pathogens from infiltrating the epidermis and disrupting collagen production, regulates skin pH, absorbs nutrients, holds in hydration, quells inflammation, defends against UV damage, and promotes healthy functioning overall. The skin microbiome acts as the first line of defense against harmful toxins and disease, he explains, and it talks to the immune system to help wound healing and keep inflammation in check. Like gut bugs, skin bugs produce those precious postbiotics, including nourishing vitamins A, E, D, and K, peptides, and enzymes that enhance your complexion. Certain strains, like Streptococcus thermophilus, help with ceramide production, which moisturizes and strengthens the skin barrier, says Marissa Garshick, MD, a board-certified dermatologist in New York. Bottom line, evidence shows that a strong microbiome gives you healthy, hydrated, radiant skin. What's strong? A diverse community of bugs, meaning many strains that coexist like a friendly forest. If those critters get killed off or one strain takes over, it causes dysbiosis, skin that's out of whack, prone to both minor issues like dryness, irritation and sensitivity, and the majors, acne, rosacea, and psoriasis. Many factors can play havoc on your skin microbiome, including pollution, harsh ingredients, and aggressive skin care. According to Garshick, a harsh product like soap, for example, can disrupt your skin's natural acidic pH, the climate microbiota flourish in. Likewise, applying formulas heavy in preservatives and antimicrobials kills all bacteria, sacrificing the good along with the bad. And over-stringent cleansers attack the barrier and strip the skin of sebum and lipids that are food for the microbiota. Both Brower and Garshick say you've got to go easy on your microbiome. Use gentle cleaners and don't pile on active, aggressive treatments that damage your delicate barrier. How to glow. Both the skin and gut microbiomes are ravenous for nutrients. That's a good thing. It means you can make a big impact with your habits and routine in a very short time, says Megan Rossi, MD, founder of The Gut Health Doctor and at The Gut Health Clinic. To feed it from the inside, provide nutrients, prebiotics that your pre-existing native microbes can utilize to grow better and become stronger, says Devkota. Ditch ultra-processed and sugary foods. They're poison to your gut. And stock up on colorful fruits, vegetables, and other plants, says Rossi. These provide fiber, your microbiota's main meal, plus polyphenols that bugs convert into metabolites that tame inflammation and slow aging. One study using polyphenols from cocoa showed reduced facial wrinkles and improved elasticity after 24 weeks, says Rossi. Diversity is also key. The latest research says 30 different plant-based foods a week is the gut-loving goal. To feed it from the outside, skincare brands are formulating products that cultivate beneficial flora, and while this is burgeoning science, experts see value in what these formulas can deliver so far. Topicals may help with inflammation, acne, free radical damage, and hydration, says Garshick. Since we live in a world full of daily assailants, tending to our microbes becomes a daily necessity. Ingredients designed to communicate with our natural ecosystem are now found in skincare and supplements, drinks, powders, pills. Here are some good stuff to try. And the first one on this list is Llama Mama Organic and Sparkling Tonic. It's $40 at Amazon. This functional beverage boosts Peruvian plant power to give you a hearty dose of prebiotics to feed your herd of good bacteria. It uses yakin root as a sweetener to supply organic fiber and antioxidants from camu camu, packed with vitamin C, camu is spelled C-A-M-U, to pump up your immune system. And they have listed the La Roche-Posay Lipikar AP Plus M Triple Repair Moisturizing Cream. That's spelled LAROCHE-POSAY. $24. Walmart, $20 at Ultra Beauty, and $20 at Skin Store. This is rich in moisturizing ingredients, including glycerin, a known humectant to draw moisture in, as well as shea butter and niacinamide, says Dr. Garshik. It also contains a thermal spring water that offers prebiotic and soothing antioxidant benefits and is safe for use on the face and body. And we have Bliss Mighty Biome Pre-Post Biotics Plus Barrier Aid, $15 at Amazon and $18 at Walmart. This deep cleansing balm helps to dissolve makeup, sunscreen, and impurities while also hydrating skin, says Dr. Garshik. It contains prebiotic beta-glucan to attract water and postbiotic lactococcus ferment lysate to help stimulate skin cell renewal. And we have Kapowder Detoxifier, and that's with a K, K-A-P-O-W-D-E-R. It's $38 at Revolve. Add 2 dropfuls of the Citrus Y tincture to water or a smoothie. Its dandelion, milk thistle, globe artichoke, and cilantro blend can help aid digestion. And we have Timeline Skin Health and Night Cream, $250 at timelinenutrition.com. This unique formula incorporates the postbiotic urolithin A to help revitalize your skin cells' mitochondria, re-energizing them and promoting healthy, youthful skin. We've run out of time for today's episode of Oprah Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Carrie Lawson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. Again, that number is 919-832-5138. So long until next time.